SonicStates.com.
So, hello everybody, and welcome to Sonic Talk number 139. This is sort of another one in the kind of not sure whether we're going to have a holiday, but let's have another go this week kind of episode of the summer editions. I would like to say thanks to everybody who's in the chat room. We've got a bunch of people in there. If you've never been to the chat room before and you're wondering what I'm talking about, then next time we record, which will be at 4 p.m. in the UK time on a Wednesday, go to sonicstate.com/live, where you can listen to the live streaming of this recording or the recording that will be happening and participate in a live chat room either via the chat thingy on the page or via IRC if you've got the client configured. Anyway, we got quite an interesting lineup this week. First of all, I'd like to welcome Chris McLeod from GeForce Software. I think this is only your second time, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Holding the fort while Dave's away, or holding everything while Dave's away. I'm sure you can manage, though.
Well, he's got his feet up, I think.
Yes, I've been seeing pictures of him sending via Twitter on sort of his feet just in front of various swimming pool shots.
Drink in hand, I hope.
I haven't seen the drink, but, you know, looks like he's having a nice time. Keeps sending pictures of his Sony camera waterproof kit, which I think he's carrying with him while he goes down various water chutes and stuff.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Anyway, good to have you. GeForceSoftware.com to see what Chris's wares are all about. And, well, where should we go? We've got such a choice here. We could go internationally almost anywhere, but I know, let's go to somewhere in the Caribbean and talk to Rich Hilton. How are you doing, Rich?
Oh, I'm doing very, very well.
Well, you sound somewhat blissed out. How's everything going? You're doing your studio installation, aren't you, over there?
Yeah, we're putting the studio in here, and if you could see what I see right now, it's unbelievable. Looking west out over the ocean, my bedroom is not 30 yards from this beautiful, empty, white sand beach. And the nice. Horizon is as far, the horizon goes for as far as you can see.
Wow. I guess it's not monsoon or tornado weather or anything. And how's all the, how's the installation part going? Everything going smooth?
For the most part, it's going smooth. We've actually hit a snag today that my partner Tim is currently working on because they have fairly flaky power here. And even where they don't, I insist on uninterruptible power supplies for a studio. And the one that was sent here doesn't seem to be working at the moment. And we've lost power in the last 12 hours probably 5 times. So it could be a serious snag if we're not able to get it working.
I imagine
we might actually have to wait for another one to arrive.
Wow. That's going to have to come by boat, presumably.
Yes, the things generally come here by boat, take a long time, and then take some time to clear customs once they arrive. So if we can't get it working, it could set us back like a week.
Oh, man. Does that mean you'd have to stay there?
You know, it just might.
Well, I kind of hope it all works out for you, whichever way it goes.
Let's I'm sure it will. Yeah, I don't think there's a downside to any of this.
No, I can't think of one. Great. Well, anyway, let's move over to the other side, other quarter of the world, and say hello to PJ Tracy, our friend from Minneapolis.
Good morning.
How are you, PJ?
Well, I'm looking east towards the far wall of my studio, and I see painted sheetrock.
And whoops! There goes the phone.
Sorry.
Other than that, I'm doing just fine.
Great. Glad to hear it, PJ. PJTracyMusic.com. You can see what he's up to and see what makes him PJ. So you were going to talk about going on holiday. So I'm guessing that didn't happen.
No, I am going to go. I'm going. The beginning of August, the very first week in August, I'll be gone for about a week. Cool. Except that Wednesday, I will be available because I am coming back into town just for that day. It happens to be my birthday.
Ah. Okay, and well, let's move back over to this part of the world to Mark Tinley, who is joining us from his cool and wonderful basement. How are you, Mark?
I'm not actually. I'm halfway up the stairs now. I don't know why.
Really?
Actually. Yes.
Are you on the naughty step?
Yes. Actually, I am. Yeah.
What a coincidence.
I'm the only person in our house who doesn't have swine flu.
Good grief. How is it? What's that creaking sound? There's just sounds like there's a lot of...
Probably my chair.
Need a bit of 3-in-1 on that. If you could just remain completely motionless for about an hour, that would be fine. Mark, swine flu. I can't believe it. So what... Is it as bad as it sorts it out, or is it just like a heavy cold?
Gina doesn't look too well, and East is, as children are, has a temperature of 102 and is running around like mad and doesn't seem to have made any difference. Blimey. To him at all, actually. He's got a weird rash, and every so often he just... Well, actually, what happened was the doctor came yesterday and to look at him, and he assessed him and sort of said, oh, yes, he meets the criteria for diagnosis. So he had, like, you know, he's got a rash and sore legs and sore arms and sore tummy and all this. And he sat beautifully on the stool while the doctor checked him out and everything. And I think he thought the doctor was going to make him better there and then, because the moment the doctor walked out the door, he just kind of fell on the floor and said, I feel horrible.
Oh, dear.
And I looked at him and went, why didn't you do that when the doctor was here? He was, like, beautifully behaved and looked as fit as a fiddle while the doctor was here.
So they're giving you kind of all of that stuff that they're supposed to give the little ones? Tamiflu,
yeah,
or whatever.
Tamiflu. Just made him sick.
Oh, really? He'd probably clear it up pretty quickly, though.
Well, I think he's better off without it, actually, personally. But.
Right. But it's only supposed to be about 48 hours, isn't it, this thing? So hopefully you'll all be fine.
What day is it today? Wednesday.
Yeah.
Gina had it on Monday and all day yesterday, and she's still a bit pasty looking and not very hot today. So it lasts 48 hours, does it? Oh, good.
I don't know. I thought it was something like that.
I haven't got it. I don't know why. I must have the immune system of an ox.
I dare say. Well, look, all our wishes, our best wishes, go to your sick family and hope they get well soon. But I'm really glad to hear that it's not as... fatal and horrible as the media seems to be making out, because I was quite interested to talk to you about it, because my other half is obviously quite worried given all the coverage that's happening. So we can safely say that you're sort of all right, really.
Yes. I don't think it's any worse than any other kind of flu, personally.
But you haven't got it, so I suppose...
No, I haven't got it at all.
Okay, well, I hope you all get well soon. Anyway, Mark Tinley and aspergineering.com, where you can keep up with what's going on in his life. So, shall we move on to our first topic? Let's have a look. What was it? It was... I've got a great introduction for this. Of course, who could forget the dulcet tones of Jamming in the Street and Street, that's from Street Stylers. That was, in fact, one of the kind of beatbox, breakbeat classics from, I guess it would have been early 80s. And this sort of introduces the topic that that I think it was Oliver Chesler spotted this one, if I remember correctly. And it's from a place called PocketCalculatorShow.com. And it's a sort of history of the boombox. And I just thought it was great. It's kind of a history of all the kind of desirable boomboxes since I think they started manufacturing. They reckon 1976 is probably the first one. I don't know about you, but I started out on a boombox, a twin cassette one, for doing overdubs and sort of bouncing things and doing synth on synth action, and because I couldn't afford a four track. And I suspect that maybe one or two of us have similar fond memories of that's how we got into it. Perhaps you, Mark?
I had, yes, I did. Exactly the same as you. I started out with various different boom boxes, and I had to buy one with a mic input on the top panel, so you could plug a mic in and hear stuff at the same time as the stuff that was playing on the internal cassette.
Yeah.
And then I used to run that. I used to play a Walkman into it, I think. So I used to record from the Walkman as a source, and then you'd got this mic voiceover thing. So you could plug your guitar into the top of the boombox, and then you could plug a Walkman into the back of it, I think, and you'd record off the Walkman and then overdub by balancing it using the mic control. Yeah. So every time you overdubbed anything, you lost a generation.
Yeah. My, that's the meaning of hiss, isn't it? The true meaning.
So if you start with drums, by the time you've done 11 tracks, if you've got 11 tracks of degeneration in your drums, And of course, you have to balance everything right first time, because once you add an instrument, you've rebalanced everything and you have to sort of guess. So it teaches you how to balance things a lot, I think.
Well, there were some great ones. I seem to remember I had one which had an overdub facility, and that was it was actually a friend of mine had this massive, great Sharp thing which had all sorts of funky kind of functions and mixers, and that's what really got me going on it. But there's some beauties in there, aren't there? PJ, have you got a boombox past?
Yes, as a matter of fact, one of the Sanyo boomboxes that they showed in the retrospective, I owned a model that was very similar to that. And I think I got it for my 8th birthday.
Whoa.
Right around 1981, 82. And I had that, and then I had previously had two cassette tabletop models, one that had the ability to slow the speed down to half. And so I'd constantly bounce by just manually syncing up the play and the record heads with whatever fingers I could, you know, stretch that far to just do cut and paste remixing and that type of thing, and recording my Juno 106 in layers, and did that until 1987 when I got an ESQ1, and then that had a 16 track sequencer in it.
Noise be gone. Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Guys, there's an obvious question.
Yes, Chris.
Have any of the three of you got any examples of the work that you did with a boombox?
Lordy. No. I probably have in a box somewhere that's sort of in the attic or under the bed. There may well, but a long, long time ago. It's kind of pre-four track even. So
my answer to that is yes, I definitely have.
Oh, cool. Archived. Well, archived.
I will look for it. I will look for it and put something out on and put a link or something. I'll see if I can do it after the show.
So, Chris, did you have you got fond memories of the boombox, or were you...
Sadly not. I was a separates person. And,
hi-fi separates kind of gentleman.
Yeah, hi-fi separates. And also for touring when we're on the road, I always took separates because you could take a Walkman, a set of headphones, and a set of speakers for the hotel room. So,
how very advanced.
A boombox was... a bit too big.
Battery sales would have been through the roof in that era, wouldn't they? I mean, because they just juiced it up. Rich, did you ever kind of get into the boombox stuff?
I did not.
They used to be good for checking mixes on. I still, I know that Gabriel's got a particularly fond Iowa one that is always there, and they've got two or three of them out at Real World, and they're kind of constantly being repaired because he uses them for singing demos into and then kind of also checking mixes on, as far as I understand, and it's got some sort of fancy... You know, I don't know. It's just the way he likes to work. So I think they're, for a lot of people, they're kind of the only, they're the final mix check. Because I suppose if you've had a boombox for that long, you kind of by now know pretty much what it should sound like if it sounds any good on it. Once you've actually, if you're feeding a line into it rather than running it on cassette, you know, you've compensated for the additional EQ settings that the cassette tape used to give to it.
I know what doesn't sound good on a boombox. When I first moved to London, I moved to Hackney, and there was a lad that used to walk around Hackney called him Tom the Punk, and he was a big lad with sort of black dyed curly hair. It was like he used to spike his hair up, but most of the time he didn't, and it had just kind of gone flat and lank hanging on his face.
Couldn't afford the gel.
But he used to walk around with this boombox on his shoulder, and it was quite a big one, and I guess he must have gone through tons of batteries, and he used to play the Exploited on it absolutely full volume, and it was just like you'd hear him from miles away coming down the street.
Right,
and
that next to his ear.
Right next to his ear, yeah. And that kind of, that guitar, you know, coming towards you, instead of the big dubby boom kind of stuff that I guess all the black guys might have been playing out of it.
They had some really big boomboxes, and you used to always used to hear sort of dub reggae coming out of them. But
if you went to the Notting Hill area, you would just see a lot of black people carrying the same ghetto blaster, but playing a different style of music. So yeah. That, I mean, the fact that he was, who's this, Tinley, that's me you're talking about. He said, I love that boombox. That's not Tom, it can't possibly be.
Wow, that would be a coincidence, wouldn't it, in the chat
room? That would be really rather weird, yeah.
And it's a great article over at pocketcalculatorshow.com. Go and check it out. There's pages and pages of great ones. A particular favorite one I thought was the Casio KX101, which is has got a built-in MIDI synthesizer on the top panel, which I thought I'd have killed for that if I'd known that was around. That looked really good, but some of them were really expensive as well. Anyway.
What about one with a turntable, like the Marantz PMS 6000, I think it was. That was incredible as well.
I can't imagine moving that around would have been good, could it? If you had that on your shoulder while playing a 45, it would have sort of jumped all over the place, wouldn't it?
Mobile disco.
Yeah. I'd just like to say at this point, I'm very much pleased to say thank you to Roland.co.uk, who would sponsors of the show. And they'd like to bring your attention to the Juno DI, which I incidentally have had in for review this week. And this is, in fact, some of the piano that it's capable of. I managed to do a couple of demos, and having it actually in the office and being able to play with it, it is all it's cracked up to be. And I'm not normally one to believe the marketing hype, but considering the cost, it's got 1,000 sounds that are based on the Phantom G, derived from there. It's very easy to use. It's really a player's keyboard, but it also has 16-part multi-timbrality and 128 voice polyphony, so you can run it as a, you know, the core of your as part of a sequencer setup. It's battery operated as well, if you need it to be, so you can do the show in the park. It plays back MP3, WAVs, AFF, and MIDI files, so you can use it in, as part of a live performance if you're kind of doing covers or whatever. It's also got a mic input with reverb and what have you. It really is worth checking out. So if you want to get over to Roland.co.uk, please do. And keep an eye out on Sonic State for the forthcoming Juno DI review. I think you might be pleasantly surprised.
Rock Band Network is a new system that will allow anyone to sell their music in Rock Band. We're opening the musical floodgates and empowering the artist with the professional tools to self-publish. With the Rock Band Network, we're leveling the playing field. It's going to enable you to release tracks on your schedule, to become a part of your music distribution plan. And through RBN, we're providing Rock Band fans with a diverse new offering of genres and songs to play in the game. We're giving you the same tools our professional audio team uses to create songs for Rock Band. When we say you can create songs for Rock Band, we're not talking about mashing pre-recorded samples together to create a song. We mean taking the digital master recordings of your songs and authoring each instrument, as well as vocals, into a full Rock Band track.
Well, there you have it. Quite an interesting distribution method. I don't know how many copies of Rock Band. Rich Hilton, do you got a Rock Band in your house? Is it something your kids are into?
We have Rock Band. We have Guitar Hero. We have all kinds of stuff around my house. But even more pertinent to this particular discussion is I did a project that was specifically geared towards Rock Band. Let's see, just about a year ago. There in California, and it's appeared as purchased content in Rock Band, and I've heard it in my own living room.
Oh wow, cool! Did you have to? Did you get into the authoring process, or did you just provide the sort of bar naught stems for everybody to?
It was stems that were provided, and I was not the primary engineer on the project actually, so it wasn't me doing the providing, but that's how it went.
Ah, interesting, because it looks like basically what they're doing is they're dressing up the fact that they're giving out a development kit to all and sundry, and then you just submit your songs, and then they're asking the Rock Band kind of audience, the people who are sort of really deep into Rock Band, to then vet the tracks. So at the end, all they have to do is kind of have the final approval, and then hopefully it gives them additional content. Because when you author it, you get this particular, they give you all the tools, and you have to put the MIDI notes in so that it shows up on the fretboard at the right time and all that sort of thing. Yeah. Sounds like it could be another. How many people do they reckon to play? Millions. There are millions of people out there who would be purchasing this. Can you buy it directly in the game? I wasn't clear about that.
Yes.
You can- Oh, that's
yes.
pretty cool.
It's an online purchase through the in our case through the Xbox, where you buy the content. You can buy customized content. The stuff we worked on was an additional content offering.
Huh. So I don't know whether anyone's be interested to see what the first Rock Band millionaire kind of comes out. I don't know. Chris, do your kids play Rock Band? Can you see this flying?
I can see it flying for them. They're still a bit young for Rock Band. But they're both into playing instruments, so I think it's just a matter of time. I'm trying to keep them slightly away from computers, but
yeah, till the last minute. I don't blame
exactly,
you.
Not with much success at the moment. PSPs and those things, but
everything. But yeah. And PJ, how do you can you see this being? I mean, because I quite like to see some stuff that's maybe, you know, electro band, not just rock band. Let's have a kind of some electro stuff as well. It'd be kind of fun. Although you're all going to end up being the keyboard player, and there's only one of those, isn't there?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Is there a keyboard instrument for Rock Band? I might be a little unhip in the fact that I don't play it. I bet I don't have.
There probably isn't, is there?
I've
made a terrible faux pas.
Yeah, they should make one.
Well, that you could pretend it was a MIDI guitar or a MIDI bass, couldn't you?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the genre. You know, whether or not the genre expands a little bit. According to the article that you sent us, Nick, they've had 50 million sales.
Jesus.
Through the Rock Band system. 700 independent or 700 different individual artists or bands are currently coded into the Rock Band system, I guess, and over that number, 50 million units have sold as downloads. So that's, I mean, if you average it out, that's over 70,000 per individual band.
Yeah, that'll do.
It's a lot.
And you can set, was it 50 cents to $3 per song, and you get 30% of any resulting sales. I imagine those people who've been doing the original 700 songs probably get a favorable split. Actually, Akai Pete in the chat room has just said that maybe they should do something called Guitar Hero, which I think is a great idea.
It's fantastic.
I'd buy
Feature
it.
That woman that plays with Borat.
Yeah, that would be great. Mark, you don't do Rock Band, do you? But can you see yourself having to author this for any of your clients, possibly?
It would be a very clever move, wouldn't it?
Probably.
I mean, I actually think it's a really clever business model in terms of repackaging music and selling it to people in yet another format. It's really clever.
Yeah, and also, I mean, loads of people haven't got iTunes and iPods and stuff, so, you know, but lots of people have got games consoles, so perhaps they'll...
But it also switches on kids to music from their... I mean, there's always that thing, isn't there, when you get to a certain age where you want to start digging through your dad or your aunt or your uncle's record collection. So it turns kids onto their record collection in a completely different way, doesn't it? If Duran Duran stuck their stuff in Rock Band, then...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know whether they have or they haven't yet, but... it certainly should be suggested to them, shouldn't it?
PJ. Yeah, Mark just brought up something interesting. I mean, I think, and I was thinking about this earlier, it will be interesting to see how many, you know, A-list bands that are out there that aren't already included in Rock Band in any of its iterations will jump on the bandwagon and use this as a kind of a de facto distribution, you know, method. I would imagine most, once it starts to catch on, probably do that.
Yeah,
but I think it's also very effective with regards to catalog sales, as Mark points out, and it sort of democratizes the history of rock and roll in the minds of these young people who would otherwise really not necessarily have any reason to know much about the Aerosmith song Walk This Way, but then it comes up on Rock Band and they've got their little push-button guitar and all of a sudden they're participating in it and it brings it home to them as to why they wouldn't have otherwise probably been exposed to it. And so you meet these young kids now who are walking around singing Carry On My Wayward Son by Kansas, you know, which is what, 30 years old, and right next to whatever they're singing from their favorite alt band from, you know, this year. So
we're going to be launching a guitar section to Sonic State fairly shortly, and one of the guys who's been working on that with us was saying that Rock Band and Guitar Hero have really opened up and brought lots and lots and lots of people who were trying to kind of learn to play the guitar, and really brought, you know, it's brought a lot of people across. They're not all great and they don't all have a flair for it, but there's a real interest, and it's built up the number of people who want to play guitar and are interested in guitar an enormous amount.
I think Rich's point is very interesting, because I think that possibly the difference, Mark, between when we were younger, when you were younger, and today, is that there's so much more media. There's so many more distribution channels with the internet and internet radio, 400,000 channels on television, satellite radio, that I think Rich brings up a great point, is that with this kind of music available, not so much necessarily at random, but sort of showing up in these games, that it does introduce a whole new generation to the music of the past, and they may very easily be able to ignore it or not come across it on a daily basis.
Yeah. You won't have escaped perhaps some of your attention that there has been an international trade show apparently in Nashville this very week, ran over the weekend, Summer NAMM, which is back in Nashville, which is great, although we weren't there because there weren't that many exhibitors and it's an expensive trip for us to make, so we decided not to go. But nonetheless, there were a number of releases announced there. These little mini Akai controllers, the LPK25 and the LPD8, which are, one's a keyboard controller and the other one is a pads and a knobs kind of controller, respectively. One cannot really ignore the fact that they are very similar in form factor to the Korg Nanos, of course. And except the keyboard version, the LPK25, looks like it's probably a lot more fit for purpose. The Korg one's okay, but the keys on this LPK look a little more usable. I know, Rich, you're probably not that interested anyway because you're being a pianist, but...
Oh, sure. No, and I am interested. I mean, I used to bring a melodica around when I was younger, which isn't exactly a Steinway either, you know. It's just...
Yeah, it's about the same size, isn't it, this?
Yeah, sort of. And I can get used to a smaller key framework, you know, for certain kinds of things. The idea that you can bring these so easily around is magnificent. Yeah, I think that they took a look at what Korg was doing and said, you know, that seems like something we should do, especially given that they're the sort of king of the hill of pad control.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, so perfectly sensible product to me.
The form factor is brilliant. I mean, whenever I'm kind of need anything, I always just chuck one of these Korg Nanos in my bag because it just fits alongside, you know, it's a no-brainer and you can really use it very easily for triggering stuff. It's really looks kind of fun. I think they're going to be about $69 each. Got four scene memories. The keyboard's got an arpeggiator, apparently.
Oh, so?
Yeah, it has. In very much in the style of the MPK keyboards. I don't know whether it can be clocked externally, but we shall find out. I don't know, but it could be really cool. I mean, very handy for that sort of thing. I mean, Chris, do you have this sort of thing lying around, or are you more of a hands-off kind of?
Well, we obviously did the Fat Boy.
Yes,
of
course.
A number of years ago, which was a controller.
One of the very first, in fact.
It was probably the controller that made controllers popular. But one of the things that slightly concerns me about this is the... well, not concerns me, they're fantastic value. But I think the manufacturers could steal a march on one another if they introduced something that was innovative in the feature set. And the arpeggiator is fantastic on the LPK25 keyboard. I think that's wonderful.
Great idea.
But be great to have something like a MIDI ribbon controller or...
something a bit out of the ordinary.
Yeah, just to kind of set themselves from the pack, because there are so many controllers and they all claim to have their own method of accessing software instruments. And I just think they've all become a bit samey.
What they should do is they should offer an alternative back casing for it that fits exactly the profile of a Les Paul guitar and some Velcro. So you can just stick it on the top of your Les Paul.
Well, that's not a bad idea, actually. Just the clip-on back, you know, in the same way that you can skin your mobile phone. You could always skin your little MPK.
Well, skinning your guitar with an LPK to 25. That could be kind of cool, couldn't it?
Excellent.
Your Rock Band keyboard.
Yeah. Well, it could. I mean, there's no reason why it shouldn't be able to interface with that. I mean, that would make perfect sense. The other thing, Mark JXP in the comments of that particular news story on Sonic was saying that, you know, it would be great if they could arrange for him to have a MIDI out as well so that you could actually interface it directly with external MIDI gear. I mean, that would be a useful feature set. I mean, you'd obviously have to have a lead or something because I don't think there's any face on any of these forms that would actually be big enough to take a MIDI DIN plug, but yeah.
So why doesn't... Okay, so there's another product hole in the market. Why doesn't somebody make a USB to MIDI converter, which is basically a little box which plugs into the USB of this thing and has a battery in it and has a MIDI out on it?
Oh, that powers it?
It could power this as well. Power this and give you a MIDI out. So it's basically like it takes the place of your computer.
There was another thing, wasn't there? There was a lead. I think it was from Newmark, was it? Or Newmark Elysis, which is just basically a USB to MIDI lead. That's it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know if it's it still need power of some sort, but I don't think it would work in that sense. But it's close. PJ, can you do you hanker after these little mini controllers, or are they too fiddly?
I think they're really cool, but I'm sort of in the same camp with Chris. I'd like to see somebody do something a little bit different. I make an appeal to anybody at M Audio that might be listening to resurrect the Surface One project, because that looked amazing. I know I've talked about it in a previous show, but kind of a set of three-dimensional ribbon controllers.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes, please. Well, something else. There was also, I don't know if anyone saw the Zoom Q3 video recorder. Anyone see that? That was, it's basically, like a Flip Mino or one of those little, but it's got this sort of Zoom H2, like stereo XY mic stuck on the top of it. So you get decent stereo sound rather than just some really crummy recessed condenser mic that is constantly overloaded. That's going to be about $249 and records in MP4. Unfortunately, it doesn't do 16:9, so it's a bit behind the times there, but that looks kind of fun. Going to be ready sometime in the autumn. What else did we see? There was the Moog Murph MIDI, in fact. Did we see that? The MF-105M, which combines the Murph bass and Murph guitar filters and brings it into one pedal with a with MIDI input, so you can control, you can clock it, you can access the front panel controls over MIDI CC. There's all sorts of things you can do. That looks pretty good. That's going to be available next month at $479. And it's apparently built like a tank, in quote marks. Anyone else see anything on the NAMM front? I don't know if I don't think we've covered everything, obviously, but there was a few highlights. Almost a tumbleweed moment there, which, considering this is in the far south, is almost apt. Almost very apt there, but I'll refrain from the tumbleweed moment. In fact, actually, I wanted to play this because I did download the Major Tom multitrack, which I think we spoke about last week, and I did get it. And you can throw it into, there's lots of people on iTunes saying, oh, rubbish, it's all protected and you can't do it. And I actually took the stems and I just put them straight into Ableton Live, and it was fine with a bit of tweaking. And that Bowie actually says a couple of things at the beginning. I'll play you this.
Little mouse fart. Ground control to Major Tom.
Etc, etc. For those of you perhaps didn't hear what he said there, he said little mouse fart. So, I have no idea why, but he does sound incredibly ill, at ease, and I think it was kind of one of his early recording sessions. So, I mean, he's obviously, must have been quite intimidating back then, and he was obviously just kind of perfectly happy. There's some great stuff. I got some drums and bass here as well. This was really nice. This bass playing is amazing. I don't know who it was. Was it Herbie Flowers, maybe? Anyway, I suppose we covered that last week, but I really enjoyed messing around with that. And it goes straight into Ableton Live and you can sort of mess around with it. Sounds wonderful.
Nick, I wasn't here last week, but are you able to use those stems in your own compositions? And
I'm sure that, they wouldn't give away the rights, obviously, but you can mess around with it. And I guess if you come up with something good that people seem to like, then you would approach the relevant authorities and have it sanctioned or whatever.
Yeah. Any Mellotron or keys?
There were, yeah. I haven't got a stem to hand, but there is Mellotron and keys and string stems as well.
That would have probably been Wakeman.
You think so? I suppose because he was in a house band, wasn't he?
He played on that.
Yeah. Wow, cool. There's some great playing. Anyway, we did cover it last week, but I wanted to say, because it wasn't available, and it became available on Monday, so I downloaded it and checked it out. I really enjoyed that. So, speaking of sort of box sets and the like, here is another lovely item featuring Tara Bush. This is something I should have thought about. Started wondering why'd I walk this way. Only you were there in the setting sun. Stars were all around. Something beautiful. Do I want to live? Always traveling, feeling everything with you here with me. Or do I give up? Is this enough? This is enough. Fill up the time. That's Is This Love from Pilfer Chalet, which is a new album from Tara Bush, who is a friend of Sonic State, I'm not ashamed to say. She's comes to the UK once in a while and has been to visit us here at Sonic State Towers. I think the last time was probably about 6 weeks ago, where she brought over the box set that has just been released via Tummy Touch Records. And it's a great, just a brilliant bit of memorabilia. I ordered mine immediately on hearing it was released. And you can get it at Tummy Touch Records, and you should, because it's a lovely collectible thing. It's basically, how would one describe it? It's you get the box, you get the CD, you get 100 frames of a specially shot 16mm film, of which there are only 100 strips of 100 frames. So if all the people ever got together, they would be able to watch the film in its entirety. But you also get this sort of metal press-out thing that is a stage set, which is a little figurine of Tara and a microphone, which actually works. You plug a battery in, it's like one of those greeting cards kind of technologies, and a little synthesizer with exchangeable faceplates. And this is all made out of pressed stainless steel. It's absolutely gorgeous and just a really great idea. I just wondered if anyone else had seen it and what they thought.
Bought it straight away. I think Tara Bush's music is fantastic. I think this whole concept is fantastic in terms of its the artistic nature of it.
Yeah.
It's a collectible item, great music, really well presented, just a wonderful thing, just great to have. As soon as I saw it, I just it's a no-brainer for me at £29.99. It's just great value, great fun. And artistic. And I love her music. I think she's fantastic.
Yeah, I really like that track. It's really interesting because all the song takes place kind of at the beginning, and then the rest of the song is kind of pretty much a combo prog rock workout, which is really unusual, but in a sort of 3.5 minute format. It's brilliant, actually.
I think she's trying to do something really innovative with technologies that are being used in other ways. I think it's just wonderful. Mm. I love it.
Yeah, she's a lovely girl as well. Really nice and very sort of genuine and not at all kind of pretentious, I think I would say. Mark?
What am I buying?
What are you buying? Are you buying it?
I do want to buy it, but what's it called? Is it called Spring or Summer?
I don't know. It's the Tara Bush box set.
Or is she sold out?
Oh, no, she sold out. Chris, you might have got the last one. I'll tell you what, I'll lend you mine when I've finished with it. You can have a look at it.
I have to say, I do want to claim her as one of my own, as in, I think she might be slightly touched on the autistic spectrum.
I'm not sure about that.
I don't know. She reminds me of another lady who I know who is on the autistic spectrum, who speaks in almost the same way and is also an artist. And there's definitely some similarities there, but that stainless steel thing sounds fantastic. So
it is lovely. I haven't got mine yet. I ordered mine.
It all smacks of autistic kind of.
It was actually Matt Lewis, who's her partner, was charged with kind of putting it together with her. They kind of came up with the concept. When I was talking to them, they were saying that they were really pleased because Tummy Touch, who is I think he's called. Somebody, Tim Love Lee, he basically gave them free rein to come up with something really special and supported them all the way. And I guess it must have cost quite a lot of money to make these things. And so the limited edition side was kind of born, and they were allowed to do pretty much as they wish, which is kind of all you can ask from a record company these days, really. Because I was talking to them and I was saying, oh, they should do some paper ones and card cutout ones that you can make your own, release a kind of American synth version and a Russian synth version and a German synth version.
We need the Tara Bush pop-up synth book.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I think our children would adore that.
I think you're probably right.
I'd buy that, definitely. Well, I want to buy this, but I can't find it. It's probably on eBay for £1,000 now, isn't it?
Did you go via Nick's link, Mark?
I'm in Tummy Touch Records.
Go via the link in the show notes. I think.
Oh no, this must be it. Here, it must be called Spring. There's a picture of some. Yes, that's it.
There's a YouTube link as well showing you the pop-up stainless steel stage set. It's just
okay. I figured it out.
Rich Hilton, this is great, isn't it? This kind of box set, coloured vinyl, picture disc kind of vibe, isn't it? A great idea to kind of have it.
Yeah,
all
real clever. I like it a lot. I'd love to hear more from her, and I find her fascinating and that stainless steel stage pop-up. That just the whole thing is packaging and the marketing is brilliant.
Yeah, it would be. I hope it goes really well for them, and I'd like to. I'd like to. I've only heard a few of the tracks off Pilferage Lane. Obviously, when my CD arrives, I will be ripping it immediately into my iTunes library, I suppose.
But Nick, surely you're not going to open it.
Dude, do you think I shouldn't?
No, keep it.
Oh, I suppose that's what. Well, what I suggested they do is buy two, and then you put one immediately on eBay, and then you've got another news story when you see how much more it's going for because it's so collectible. I don't know if they're doing that.
A mercenary.
Well, you know, it's all news, isn't it? But yeah, it's a great idea. PJ, wouldn't it be nice? I mean, do you think there's time in most people's creative cycles to kind of come up with this stuff? It must have taken an awful lot of, you know, coordination to have happen.
Gosh, I hope so, because it would be good to see more of this. I think it's fantastic. Everything everybody else has said, I completely agree and concur with, and I can't wait to hear more. Sounds wonderful.
It does sound good, doesn't it? I do, yeah. I've only listened to that Is This Love a couple of times. I think I posted it when it was first put on YouTube on a sort of Sonic General Interest item. And the second time I heard it, it was really ingrained in my brain. It's a lovely melody.
Nick, there's another thing. In this day and age, we're consistently bombarded with products that are lowest item price, but people seem to want to invest in things that are desirable. We did a stainless steel version of a limited edition stainless steel version of the Fat Boy, and we sold out within weeks.
I think we ran a competition on Sonic State. That's how we first met, in fact.
I think that's probably right. And it was considerably more expensive. But even now, we get people saying, oh, I bought one of the stainless steel Fat Boys. And something like this, if people are artistic and look at their craft in a multifaceted way, this is just such a wonderful way of bringing people's attention to their art. It's just...
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's incredible. More of it, please.
More, please. Yeah, Tara Bush. Maybe when the next album's ready, you can do something. Or maybe I think the way to do it is just release. You know, come up with something else. You could augment your releases by having sort of sub releases, so you have a kind of the same album with a couple more mixes and some more brilliant marketing and packaging. That would be a great idea on a limited edition.
Whilst this is marketing, I actually see it as something much greater than that. I see it as more of an artistic. Interpretation of what she's doing as an artist as a whole, rather than just the music. I think it's incredible.
Interesting Tara Bush factoid is she started out being a singer, a kind of sound-alike singer for kind of advertising, and you know where you have to kind of, if you need someone to sound a bit like a song that you can't afford to have a sync, she would be that voice. And she's done everybody, and she's got a really amazingly flexible and versatile voice, which I'd just like to say thank you also to our second sponsor of the podcast, who are loopmasters.com, their number one website and sample CD distributor, dedicated to bringing you the most inspirational collections of royalty-free sounds and samples from some of the top producers worldwide. They've got all kinds of stuff over there. You've got chill, jazz, dance, breaks, jazz, trance, techno, drum and bass, and sound effects, all sorts of things. If you need some inspiration for productions, check out loopmasters.com. It's a sample boutique. We've also got some free samples to give away from the Mogwai collection, which is punks, electro, tech, and progressive house, and also Infinite Element Reason Refill. All you've got to do is, if you email freestuff@sonicstate.com, we will send you instructions on how to access it. There will also be a checkbox in the resulting webpage where you can choose to opt in for the Loopmasters newsletter, which of course will make us look great. Of course you don't have to, but we very much appreciate it if you did, because it'll keep them hanging around. So thanks very much once again to loopmasters.com, and don't forget they also produce a monthly podcast with production tips and tricks and interviews with various producers, and also the latest on their releases, and you can find that at looptv.net. but if you want the free stuff, send an email to freestuff@sonicstate.com. thanks once again to them for their continued sponsorship. Have we missed anything out? Has anyone got anything else?
What about the laptop stand?
Oh, the laptop stand. Oh, yes.
The visually
That's really useful, isn't it?
That is quite good, actually. It's visually uninspiring.
For what?
Well, if you're doing a gig as a DJ, you'd Can have just, your stuff underneath it, wouldn't you?
I do.
No.
Oh. Oh, okay. Chris, help.
I have an opinion on laptops and stage presence.
Yes.
It's really, really dull for the audience.
Well, that's true.
If you're a synth anorak, you can't go and see what they're using. You can't see the manufacturer's the name, what have you. And in fact, Dave said to me when he went to see Ultravox, whilst they were fantastic as a band, their stage presence was sort of lacking with Billy Curry using a laptop and a controller keyboard that seemed very precarious on a scissor stand. I've been working with Kasabian, the band, recently, and they have taken an old Hammond, digital Hammond organ and ripped the guts out of it and put a controller keyboard inside it. So what you uh-huh. see is effectively a Hammond organ on stage with a great big chrome stand that's hiding an Ovation controller playing a Receptor.
But, oh, is that right, Chris?
I do think it is right, yeah.
Well, I suppose it's showbiz, isn't it, which is what it's all about.
I think it's fantastic. They've been supporting Oasis, and the keyboard player from Oasis asked the keyboard player from Kasabian if he was actually playing the Hammond because he had seen him moving the drawbars. Well, it's not even plugged in. In fact, it's got nothing inside it.
Apart from the keyboard and the Receptor?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. What? So is the Receptor housed in the unit itself, so the whole thing self-contained?
It's not. No, the Receptor's elsewhere, but there's a controller keyboard there. But it really looks cool. I mean, it's like having a Mellotron case. It can still be playing a laptop. You know, it's. I know it's a different thing, and it's maybe SAC.
Is this? But in a way, it's a bit like having a 1963 Land Rover with a 2,000 3.5 litre V8 engine in it, isn't it?
Yes.
I suppose for the purists, perhaps it's not the not the perfect thing, but for
it
the
upsets the purists. But these hybrid things are always cool, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
But for the audience, I mean, and they're there to see a show. If the keyboard player looks like he's rocking out on the Hammond and is getting, I mean, presumably he's got something to rail against and a prop to kind of help him make himself look better and therefore enjoy himself more on stage, then that's got to be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of weird, isn't it? Because with guitars, you get to choose the shape of your guitar, and they all sound roughly the same. Whereas with keyboards, you're stuck with the shape of the keyboard if you choose a particular sound, right?
I think you'll be opening a can of worms saying that guitars sound roughly the same.
We'll save that for
they do. They all sound the same.
They've got a similar sound.
Indeed. What is a guitar?
That's a piece of wood.
Let's not go there too much.
If there's nobody there to hear it, there's a guitar player in the wood.
Well. I'm a guitarist, and I'm allowed to say this by observation.
Well, maybe we'll save that for the inaugural version of our new amped section on Sonic State. When the guitar thing comes up, we can have a discussion about planks of wood and what have you.
Can I bore you with a quick story?
Oh, please do, Chris.
I was standing by the side of the stage once. The guitar player ran to the front of the stage to play his guitar solo. And on concluding, I heard a shout from the front of the audience, "Play your banjo up the handle a bit, boy."
Excellent. Oh, lovely.
Another example of this sort of sleight of hand stage prop thing is, for years now, Billy Joel has been touring playing a Kurzweil controller and piano sound within the confines of an actual grand piano body.
Okay. Well, that makes it, because, well, he's the piano guy, isn't he? And to be honest, shifting a grand piano around a place has got to be a bit of a liability. And it makes sense.
Well, they're still moving the bulk of it,
I suppose. But it doesn't matter whether they drop it, I suppose, does it? Because it'll still be in tune.
There is that, but
they don't have to tune it.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's that to do with being able to easily switch keys. To be polite about it.
Ah, okay.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
All right. Okay.
So he can still play things in their original key physically, and have them appear in any pitch that he wants them to.
Well, I used to tour with a theatre group who were based in Bath, Natural Theatre. They did a show called Scarlatti's Birthday, and there was a lot of harpsichord in it, and there was a harpsichord on stage, but it just had a DX7 in it, so it was just the sort of box that, you know. So, but it's the same thing, you know, it's the same sort of principle.
Exactly.
Yeah. I saw the Eagles were doing the same thing on tour for a little while, putting a controller inside a grand piano. case, and I think Elton John did that for a few tours as well.
Yamaha did it, didn't they, with a real grand, the P7 that had a MIDI controller attached to the keyboard.
Yeah, to answer PJ, right now on the current Elton and Billy tour, if you listen to recordings of it, it's pretty plain to tell that Elton's playing a real piano and Billy's not.
Is that right on the current one?
It certainly is plain to me.
Yeah, well, you're kind of, I guess it would be if you're a piano kind of guy.
Well, no,
really.
As soon as Billy lights into that song, Angry Young Man, where it ends up, where he's pounding on a middle C, and playing chords around it, as soon as you start re-triggering notes like that in a digital controller,
it doesn't sound right.
Dead giveaway.
Yeah.
Because the sound doesn't build up in the string. It's just like firing a gun off, 100 times.
Yeah. I got you. As Zen Artist in the chat room says, it's a bit like Dummy Marshall stacks bringing it back to guitars, isn't it? Where you just have this huge wall of speakers that, there's only a couple of them plugged in because, frankly, it'd be too loud, but it looks good. It's the same kind of principle, isn't it? It's all part of the show. So anyway, that sort of came around as one of the other Summer NAMM stories, which was a Akai, I think it's Newmark, performance stand for laptops, which basically looks like a piece of angle iron that you raise the laptop up by, 8 or 10 inches, and then you've got room underneath for perhaps DJ controllers or a keyboard. I think it's functionally probably quite useful, but as you say, Chris, perhaps not quite so exciting to watch of a live evening kind of gig type of a situation.
I shan't be going out and getting the boxed version for my collection of boxed things.
No, perhaps not. Well, we could probably call it a King Sonny, because the jazz chord synth can probably wait for another day. I know, Rich, as you're probably supposed to be at work as well, so you probably need to get back to doing the things that you do. Do you? How's the power supply coming along?
Actually, in the first 15 minutes of this podcast, I was responding to messages from the building over. The uninterruptible power supply has a dead battery, or a reasonably dead battery, and one is being FedExed to us as we speak.
Lordy.
Hopefully for arrival on Friday, and hopefully it won't take 3 days to clear customs.
If you pull that thing apart, you'll find that there's a motorcycle battery inside it. And if you hook it up to pretty much any 12-volt battery, that will work. So
yeah,
you could take the battery out of any vehicle that's within, whatever distance. In other words, you could take a battery out of one of your cars and connect it up with crock clips.
And then
he
wouldn't get to stay any longer.
Yeah, hopefully Rich's employer.
Oh, no, it's broken. It's broken, hasn't it? Edit that out.
Well, no, it's not that we have this pressing. I mean, it would be nice to not have the power going down 5 times a day, but it's not the pressing need for it to be working now. It's the pressing need for it to be working after we've left.
Okay. But you want to leave it knowing that it works rather than leave and then find out it hasn't been working, obviously, don't you?
Yeah, unless they want to bring me back here to make it work, yeah.
Come back with one in hand luggage might be a bit tricky, mightn't it?
Well, my dealer in New York was pushing for that concept in a big way.
I'll bet he was.
Oh, I'll
yeah.
bring it to you.
I mean, if that thing kicks off and goes off for 3 minutes, then and you need to put a bigger battery on it, you can stick a big caravan leisure battery on it.
Okay. Well, thank Mark. Maybe you need a ticket. You should head out there and do some advice on Caribbean UPS for remote recording studio facilities, perhaps.
UPS hacking. I could do UPS circuit bending, couldn't I?
And I hear they're particularly looking for people bringing swine flu in with them.
Yes. I imagine they're definitely looking for that.
Yeah. Okay.
Perhaps not. Oops, your cover's blown. Well, guys, thank you very much for this week. I appreciate you joining us. Chris McLeod, thank you for stepping in for Dave Spears. You're, of course, welcome at any time. For those who don't know who Chris is one of the GeForce posse. And you can find out more about the GeForce software instruments at geforcesoftware.com.
Thank you.
Welcome. And PJ Tracy from Minneapolis, thank you for joining us. I know you've got another busy week, and I hope you are working up to your holiday and will enjoy it in the fullest way possible.
I most definitely will. Thank you so much. And I just wanted to let people know that I'm doing a slight redesign of the audio example section on my site. So if anybody is interested in hearing current projects that I've been working on, they should be up by Friday.
That's pjtracymusic.com. And Mark Tinley, still on the naughty step, but I think you're fine. How do you do it? You have you've been sat on there for an hour, so you must have been very, very naughty. But thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much, and thank you for turning me on to that Tara Bush thing. I've bought it.
You've got it. Excellent. Yes. So we.
But now I don't know if I should open it or not. Now you've said that, and now I'm sort of thinking maybe I should have bought two.
Yeah, and then put one on eBay. One to use.
I did like the music
to...
as well. I thought the I loved the little stainless steel. I'm going to have to open it actually.
Yeah, you
I
will,
mean the thing. I did. You can't worry about these things. When I was a teenager, I opened the Sgt. Pepper album that my Aunt Jenny had and pulled all the moustaches and everything. And maybe I was a bit younger than a teenager, and I cut all of the cardboard cutouts out and everything. And my mother had a fit because she knew how much it meant to my aunt.
Oh no.
So when I was much older, I found one on eBay and sent it to her as a gift, and it cost like £5 or something.
Right.
I suppose.
It wasn't worth that much then, so it's all right.
Exactly. And she'd forgotten all about it at that point.
Oh, but she must have. So it just brought back raw memories. That's why you've been sat on the naughty step, Mark. It's all. Anyway, Mark, aspergineering.com, and I hope your family recover from their swine flu, and I'm glad to hear that it's not as bad as it's all cracked up to be, so health and happiness to everybody there. And Rich Hilton in the sunny Caribbean, your studio... work I hope is going well, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your time there, and we will speak to you on the other side.
Thank you very much, and I've just received word that he got it working.
Hoorah! Is that so good or bad? I don't know. Should I cheer or should
good.
I be boo? Hooray.
No.
Okay. Quick question for Rich. Which island are you on?
Grand Turk, I believe it's called, in Turks and Caicos.
Thank you.
Yes.
Wow. Well, so if anyone's passing in the next kind of, I don't know, 24 hours or so, just happen to be rowing past, drop in and say hi, perhaps.
Please, wave. You can see my bedroom from there.
Thank you very much. This podcast was brought to you by loopmasters.com and roland.co.uk, who would very much like to you to check out the Roland Juno DI. Keep an eye out for the review coming up on Sonic State soon. And thanks to all of those in the chat room, sonicstate.com/live. If anybody has got any comments or messages, you can drop us an email at sonictalk@sonicstate.com if you've got any suggestions for topics or you want to comment. Obviously, we read the comments on the show notes too. And if you want to leave a message and talk to us, Sonic Talk is our Skype handle. We got an answer phone on there. There are various telephone numbers which are also in the show notes that you can ring from a country near you. That was Sonic Talk number 139. Thank you very much.